Recording started.
Thank you very much, Bryce. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the CCWG Accountability Workstream 2 call on Thursday, 17th of June, 2016. On the call today, we have Robin Gross, Carlos Gutierrez, Corinne Katt, Tapani Taravainen, Yor Felsingus, Klaus Stoll, Neil Ten Orva, Rafik Damak, Avery Doria, Aidan Ferdelin, Fazani Badi, GK Kabir. And from staff, we have Adam Pick and myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you, Robin.
Thanks very much, Mariam. Thanks to everyone who's joined this call. As you know, we need to go over some of the work stream two issues in the CCWG Accountability Working Group. Let me very quickly review the agenda and see if there's anything folks want to add. Okay, so I thought we'd talk about where we are now and what's up next for the CCWG Accountability Group. And then let's just dive straight into the nine work stream two issues. And while we're talking about each one, let's talk about what some possible goals and desired outcomes could be for each one of these sub-issues and whom from NCSG will join these different subgroups and work on these different issues. So the nine Workstream 2 sub-issues are increased transparency at ICANN, which includes things like the document information disclosure policy reform, getting more transparency in board deliberations, instituting a culture of transparency at ICANN, having more transparency around lobbying and the discussions with governments that ICANN engages in, and improvements to ICANN's whistleblower policy. So that's a big meaty one right there. The second issue is creating a framework of interpretation for ICANN's new commitment to respect human rights. Influence, the third issue is to discuss the influence of ICANN's jurisdiction on operational policies and accountability mechanisms. The fourth issue is staff accountability. The fifth issue is SOAC accountability. The sixth issue is reform of the Ombudsman's Office. The seventh issue is diversity at ICANN. The eighth issue is reviewing the cooperative engagement process, which is the first step to filing an independent review panel manner. And the ninth issue are guidelines for ICANN board standard of conduct associated with the removal of board members. So those are the nine issues that have been flagged for work stream two. So that's a lot. So we should also then talk about how we can work on these issues collectively as a stakeholder group. And so I wanted to propose a working method. And then we can talk about how should the CCWG Accountability Group approach the work stream two issues and try to manage the workload, because it is a large workload, and we're not done with work stream one entirely. So there's an enormous amount of work yet to be done on these issues, and then any other business. So was there anything anybody wanted to add to this agenda or any questions or concerns on it? Okay, not hearing any. Let's just dive straight in. So where are we now, and what's next for the group? So we just earlier this spring completed a quick recap here for those who are new. We completed the Workstream 1 recommendations, which are the recommendations that are directly tied to the IANA transition, and those went to the board and were approved, and then they went to the NTIA, and the NTIA has approved the plan. So we're hoping that the Workstream 1 implementation will be done in the coming months, and so we'll be doing that in parallel with Workstream 2. So with respect to Workstream 2, we are supposed to have sort of a kickoff meeting in Helsinki where we begin to scope out the issues and start thinking about some of the recommendations and dividing up into subgroups with different people working on the different issues, and then reporting back to the CCWG Accountability Main Group about progress. I think that the plan, and it is very tentative, but at this point in time, the targets in terms of a timeline would be to have the sort of initial scoping of the issues done shortly after the Helsinki meeting, and then coming up with our draft proposals. That would be sometime around Hyderabad in November. And then we would refine those proposals based on public comment. And the timeline for that discussion would be next March, which would be in line with the Copenhagen meeting. And then the final approval of the report for chartering organization approval is targeted for sometime around the Johannesburg meeting in June of 2017. So we've got, you know, more than a year, and I think this is a bit ambitious of a timeline. Like all of the other timelines that have been presented to us, it inevitably slips, but, you know, we try to have a tough timeline to begin with to sort of keep us going as we continue with the work. So that's sort of where we are and where we're headed on these different overall issues. Now let's talk about the very specific issues, and the first one being transparency. And I don't know if folks noticed, but I've created sort of a volunteer sign-up sheet for different members of the NCSG to just sign up for some of the different issues and to help work on some of these different issues. So the link is over in the notes section on the Adobe Connect room. So feel free to link to sign up to that at any time. I'm going to repost it right now in the chat, too, in case somebody can't see it. Oh, Farzi beat me to it. Thank you. Okay. So first issue is transparency, increased transparency. This is really one of the most important accountability issues that we can work on because it is just so fundamental to all of the other kinds of accountability mechanisms that have been created. We have to know what is happening in order to be able to comment on them and or to hold someone to account for them. If that which we don't know is going on, we can't very well correct. So transparency is really one of the most important things that this group is set out to do, and it is unfortunate that it is in work stream two. However, it was seen as such a large and broad and sweeping sort of reform that needs to take place that it couldn't really wait or it couldn't really be done in time for the transition, and it's not directly tied to the IANA transition, although that's debatable. So that was an issue that got pushed into work stream two. So there were a number of sub-issues that the working group has already identified and were included in our report. And if you take a look at Annex 12 of the final report, they go into a little bit of detail on what is meant by some of these issues, what we're trying to get at. So when it comes to transparency, the issue, there are several different sub-issues here. One is the reform of the document information disclosure policy, the DIDP, which is ICANN's policy where they're supposed to make information public. Think of it sort of like a freedom of information request policy. However, what it ends up being is just a catalog of reasons for why ICANN just denies access to all the information. You know, everything comes back saying, sorry, this is too burdensome. Sorry, this would be confidential information. We don't want to release it. And there really isn't any outside or independent analysis or judgment done about these kinds of determinations. And it's really entirely within the hands of ICANN's legal department to decide what gets disclosed and what doesn't get disclosed. And so there's a lot of concern about this policy and the record that this policy has of blocking access to information instead of turning it over. So that's one of the issues that's Right for Reform in Workstream 2 on transparency. Another, actually the issue of creating a culture of transparency at ICANN, it's not really a sort of a separate sub-issue, but it is something that we're trying to do overall with all of these sort of sub-issues within transparency itself, is to sort of change the way ICANN operates from a default of everything is closed and only if you can provide just cause and maybe a battalion of lawyers will you get access to information, to one where the default is everything is open with the exception of limited, narrow, documented exceptions that can be reviewed by independent parties. So this creating a culture of transparency is really something that falls into each one of these sub-issues. And one of the most important ones is the issue of increasing transparency with respect to board deliberations. You know, the board mailing lists are not public the way the GNSO Council mailing lists are public. The board calls where they discuss these issues and make decisions on these issues, deliberate on these issues, are not public the way the GNSO Council has to do all of its work in public. And the way legitimate lawmakers or policymakers in today's day and age, in fact, have to do their work in public. So really trying to change the way the board operates to more transparency and trying to understand its thinking and why it's coming to the decisions that it's coming to is one of the sub-issues. Another one of the sub-issues in transparency is the trying to increase transparency with respect to ICANN's discussions with governments and the lobbying that is done. There's been a number of press reports in the last couple of years that have shown ICANN hasn't been entirely honest with the community about the amount of money that it's spending on lobbying governments and what it's lobbying for and how does this in fact relate to the ICANN's limited mission or what the community cares about. So there's been very widespread calls for more transparency with respect to these kinds of discussions, especially as ICANN moves into a much more political sphere as it is heading into, has been heading into. The final sub-issue with respect to transparency, and then I'm going to stop and open for comments and discussions, is the improvements to ICANN's whistleblower policy, which is basically when somebody discovers that something at ICANN is not appropriate or not legal or violating somebody's privacy or violating some law or engaging in some sort of egregious conduct, how can an insider blow the whistle on that without feeling like they are going to face retribution from the organization that they work for. So there has been some concern that policy isn't broad enough. It isn't we haven't really looked at that policy in detail, and so I think that, you know, that's obviously the sort of the first thing to do is to see just what it is and how is it being used and where is it failing or not. So those are a number of issues on the first issue of increasing transparency at ICANN. And so we've got a lot of work to do on these issues. And so let me just stop here and open it up for others to say, to join in and add what they would like to contribute on this issue or what they would like to see as an outcome on this issue or anything along those lines. And I see we've got a queue starting. So we've got Carlos and then Farsi. Carlos, go ahead.
Thank you, Robin. This is Carlos for the record. Thank you very much. I don't know if it fits into this chapter, but I want to mention one thing, and that's the lack of data, hard data, and why ICANN is so slow in publishing data about the new GTLDs, while others in the community have access to the data, offer software to analyze data, etc. It's very strange. I'm talking about my experience in the competition review, where any request for data directly to ICANN says no, because we have confidentiality with registrars and registries, and they don't give data. But you turn around, and there are a lot of people producing reports, analyses, and selling software based on the root data. So I think it's very strange, and I think the source of authoritative data on how the market is doing should be ICANN and not secondary sources. And I don't know if it fits into transparency, but for me, for economic purposes, for market purposes, I really have a big question mark if that should not be discussed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carlos, and thanks for bringing that up, because I think that is directly tied to transparency. You know, ICANN, like you said, has all of the data. They hold all the numbers, and they choose to release numbers that make them look good or that will make the argument for the objective that they want, and they withhold numbers that don't. And so, you know, everybody else is at a significant disadvantage of simply, you know, knowing what the facts are, and the ability to control the facts and shape access to information is very, very powerful. I wonder, I'm not sure, but I wonder if this is something that would fall under the reform of the Document Information Disclosure Policy, the DIDP. If, you know, trying to use that policy as a means of accessing this kind of data would be appropriate. So that's something to think about, and I hope you'll work on this issue. Farzi's next in the queue. Go ahead, Farzi.
Hi, my name is Farzi. I have a cold. Size on a baby for the record. So I just want to say what I'm going to focus on. What I'm going to focus on is fixing the defined conditions for non-disclosure, which is, so ICANN has these several clauses of conditions for non-disclosure. And these are like very obscure. And most of the time, they use that to reject requests for documents. One of the most important one that I think I'm going to focus on is this, that ICANN reserves the right to deny disclosure of information under conditions not designated above, which refers to the clauses, and then determines that the harm in disclosing the information outweighs the public interest in this closing the information. So basically, ICANN is in charge of saying that, okay, establishing that, oh, this is against public interest, so I'm not going to disclose it, which I think should be fixed. And also, a couple of words in the clause is that they are obscure, and we need to focus on that. And then the other thing that I think I don't know if we can focus on it and transparency in this session is that the most of the time the CCWGs are should be also subject to transparency measures. And I have asked this in one of the CCWGs. I have asked for more transparency, which we kind of did get there a little bit, but we didn't get I guess fully what we wanted. I think Avery is more Avery is more experienced in that sort of expertise, but I think we should also work on the CCWGs and working groups transparency. Thank
Hi, can you hear me? Sorry about that. I was on mute there. thanks very much, Farzi, for raising that issue. The issue of transparency of how the CCD works itself is an extremely important issue, and you know, we're it is the group that is supposed to be setting the standards of transparency for everybody else. So, you know, it gosh darn better have pretty good transparency standards itself. So I think that we've had moments of wonderful transparency where our meetings were open and everyone could join in and participate, and they were recorded and transcribed, and there were notes taken, and people were given opportunities to object for a couple of meetings to decisions before they were taken. And so I think there have been many aspects that were really wonderful about the transparency, but some that have not been so wonderful. And unfortunately, it looks like Workstream 2, the proposal that was put forward by the co-chairs and the staff a couple of weeks ago, seems to be less transparent, that we would be working less transparently than we did in Workstream 1. For example, they proposed that they do not make the transcriptions available, or is it the recordings? It's one and not the other, available for these calls, which is a bit problematic for a number of people. Yes, it's no transcripts. That's right. Thank you. So, you know, that's caused a lot of problems. You know, we're trying to say, hey, we need to be transparent in our operations, and we're going to be saying, hey, board, you better be transparent, and hey, community and staff, you better be transparent, but we're not going to provide transcriptions. So, you know, I think a number of us in the group have pushed back on that. So I think, but I think that, and I'm not sure that's the way it's going to turn out, because that we've pushed back on that. But I think that you're right, Farzi. This is an issue we need to pay attention to, and we need to make sure that our work is transparent. There have been a little bit of concern about the what's going on with the lawyers and the co-chairs. Nobody has any idea of what's happening in those discussions, also with the staff. So there are some places where there are sort of black holes and decisions are being made and come back to us still, and we need to watch out for those. And in addition to simple issues like, you know, making sure there are transcripts and recordings and notes taken, that sort of thing. Was there anything else that on this issue of transparency? I know it's a big media issue, and we're going to need, quite frankly, an army of people working on this issue alone. but I do think it is single-handedly one of the most important issues, that if we can fix the transparency issue, a lot of the other accountability problems that I can become less significant, because if there are less shadows, less misdeeds can be done in them. So I want to encourage people in particular to sign up for the transparency issue. Anything else on this? I don't see any hands. Okay. Let's move on to the next issue, which is the human rights issue, creating a framework of interpretation for ICANN's new commitment to respect human rights. So this is an issue that, frankly, the NCSG should be very proud of, because it is largely because of the NCSG that this issue of ICANN having to respect human rights has made its way into the bylaws, even if it is provisionally and dependent upon definition and all these other little provisional assurances. It is actually rather significant. However, it is also a potential for great danger, so we need to be very careful and how we proceed on this issue. And we're very lucky that we've had a number of people who have been very active on this issue, in particular Niels from Article 19 and Tatiana have both been very active on this issue and have helped to shape the dialogue and the recommendations. And so I would like to ask if one of them would like to sort of talk about this issue and how they see this issue in Workstream 2 and what we need of our members on this issue. Niels, I see your hand is up. Why don't you go for it?
Hi, all. Great to have us all together to warm up a bit for the Helsinki experience. Thanks for putting all this together, Robin. And there is some great work ahead. We're pretty organized. That's really nice because we have been working on this now for quite a while in the cross-community working part in ICANN's corporate and social responsibility to respect human rights, where we have a specific subgroup dedicated to Workstream 2, where we've been working on the historical references and uses of what a framework of interpretation is or what are possible instruments. We've been working on a visualization. We've been writing papers to think about this. So we are quite on track. And what I think is really important to for the upcoming work is to keep it very sizable. We should not try to create a human rights policy in Workstream 2. No, 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 no. As Tatjana has really clearly worked out, is that the framework of interpretation is really a framework of interpretation of the bylaw. It should explain word for word what the bylaw means, and we should not go beyond that. And the bylaw is not that complicated. We'll be talking about instruments. What does respect mean? What does protect mean? And we'll be discussing a lot about druggy principles and the history of human rights. But we've also got some very good people, so I am pretty pretty much trusted it will go okay. We also have done a lot of scoping on the risks for content and trademarks finding its ways into there. We also written quite a lot about that. So I think that is definitely something we need to watch out for, but it's also something on which we've been working. So there is a place within the NCSD where we have been prepping. Prepping is underway, and we're always very happy to get more people in our little group to make the work better. I hope this sets out a bit of work, and I see Tatjana is up there as well, who will say anything I said much better and also say the things that I forgot.
Thanks, Niels. Tatjana, you have the floor.
Hear me. Tatjana Tropina is speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Sorry. Hear me?
Yes, Tatjana, we can hear you, although it's kind of a low sound.
I will try to be very loud. If you okay, so if you don't hear me, just let me know. I'm basically screaming right now. So exactly what Niels told. We have our little group, and we are going to, like, we are having two tracks. First, what we can propose, like, for example, what framework of interpretation is, what kind of instruments we might consider, or at least not like they will be applicable, but which will define the scope of this human rights commitment. Which instruments will define what is enforced, what is protected, in terms of what is not applicable, what is applicable. And the second track is the problems we might anticipate. As, for example, Robin said, that it might be a danger, this law, like, for example, content regulation. So we are preparing that to, like, what would be our arguments against. So, and as Niels already told, we have this group, we are working on this, anyone can join at any time, and yes, guys, we need you, and if you can distribute this information in your network, that we need people. Sometimes drafters, sometimes force of numbers, we need new perspectives, so we will be welcoming anyone there. Thanks. Basically, I think Niels already told everything, and only if there are any questions, we can answer them. I'm finished.
Thank you very much, Tatjana. I really appreciate that. Was there anyone else who wanted to ask a question or make a comment on the human rights issue in work stream two? A lot of important work to be done there, so I think we'll get some bodies signed up to work in that one as well. Going once, going twice. Sold. Okay, so let's go on to the next issue, which is, it says up there, it says jurisdiction of ICANN headquarters, but that's actually not correct. It is jurisdiction, it is ICANN sort of jurisdiction in the sense of how does the legal jurisdiction of impact ICANN policies, ICANN operations, ICANN's ability to exercise the accountability mechanisms. So it technically isn't at all about the what's the legal jurisdiction for ICANN headquarters. However, there are a lot of folks in GAC who are very unsatisfied with ICANN being headquartered in the United States and would like to see this issue become the issue of how and where to change ICANN's the jurisdiction of ICANN's headquarters. So, you know, you kind of have to be prepared for that conversation, even though that really isn't the way that the Workstream 2 issue on jurisdiction is supposed to go. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about this particular issue on jurisdiction? I think it's incredibly important. I see Farzi's got her hands up. Okay, go ahead, Farzi. I'll stop.
Hi, Farzi and Farzi for America. So for the jurisdiction, when I looked at it, and I looked at it a long time ago, to be honest, but when I look at the jurisdiction problem and I look at the government's argument or what we have to look at the jurisdiction and see whether ICANN should be headquartered in California or not, or what sort of implications the ICANN jurisdiction has, what I see is not, I don't understand what the practical implications are and what they are worried about. They never say why they are worried that ICANN is incorporated in the U.S., or if they just very generally say for accountability issues. What I think, I have joined the jurisdiction group because I want to understand what their arguments are. For example, France and Brazil strongly argue that ICANN's jurisdiction is an important matter for WS2. And also, I think it's a matter of their sovereignty as well. They want to weaken U.S. sovereignty over DLS. But why? For what reason? What has? I don't understand their reason. So what I would like to focus on is to see what sort of implications jurisdiction has for ICANN and its accountability, and see I want to see what sort of arguments they have.
Thanks very much, Farzi. Milton, you're next. Go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay. So I just noted that I signed up for the jurisdiction group. I think it's the only one I'll be able to sign up for. I share many of Farzana's questions about or reasons for being on that. We do want to find out what the governments and people who worry about jurisdiction, what arguments they're making. But I think I do have a better sense of why they're concerned about jurisdiction. And it does have some legitimate issues in there, in the sense that, control should, for example, Congress pass legislation regulating a corporation in U.S. jurisdiction, it could influence policies or operations in ways that we might view as, from a multi-stakeholder perspective, as illegitimate. And there is this idea of the that Pranesh has brought up, which I think is a valid idea, even though he didn't do a very good job of promoting it, of jurisdictional resiliency, so that, you know, if we ICANN's headquarters is in the U.S., then maybe the root zone manager's jurisdiction might be somewhere else. So we might want to keep an eye on the root zone management agreement to see if that is open-ended and allows for contractors from different jurisdictions to at least compete for the RZM contract. And there may be ways in which, you know, U.S. law, U.S. jurisdiction could interfere with the what is supposed to be a non-sovereign, globalized policymaking process. So I think this is definitely an area that is worth paying attention to. I'm not sure how much influence it will have, but I think it's definitely an interesting area.
Thanks very much, Milton, and thanks for volunteering to join on that issue. I'm happy to hear that. Anybody else have anything that they want to add on the jurisdiction issue? It's going to be a battle. Okay, I don't see any hands or hearing anyone, so let's go on to the next issue, which is staff accountability. This is an interesting issue. This is sort of in line with the problem that many have commented on at ICANN, how the staff sort of leads the board rather than the board leading the staff. And so one of, you know, the way it typically works in typical organizations is that, you know, the board's in charge and the staff has to take direction from the board. But ICANN is a very unusual organization, and it has evolved in such a way that, you know, there are new board members in and out all the time, but there is a handful of hardcore, very senior level, often in the legal department or VPs, staff members who really know where all the bodies are buried and know what information to tell the board in order to get the answer from the board that they would like. So the board is very much managed by the staff. And so the typical response of, well, the board is supposed to manage the staff, so we don't need to manage we don't need to work on staff accountability really doesn't apply when we're talking about ICANN, because it isn't a typical organization. The staff really has been able to manage the board. And so this is an issue that I think will also have some overlap with other issues. For example, the transparency issue. I expect we'll see transparency a lot of places, but I think it's one that if we had a better understanding about how staff makes their decisions, what the thought process is, how decisions are taken and what the issues are and what the information that they accept as input and use to evaluate, will provide us with a lot more information about understanding how ICANN actually operates. So the issue of really trying to make sure that staff treats members of the community equally and without favoritism, depending upon who's more powerful or who could offer some sort of goodie. You know, these kinds of issues really need to be taken up in Workstream 2 on this issue. And I see we've got a queue forming, so I'm going to stop here and hear what others have to say. I see Avery, and then Carlos, and then Klaus. Okay, Avery, you've got the floor.
Okay, thanks. This is Avery speaking. In addition to everything you said, I think that there's, as you say, first of all, there's a very tight linkage with the transparency, not only the notion of a culture of of transparency that applies also to staff actions, but the whole whistleblowing and making sure that that works, that it's effective, and that it's safe goes into the accountability of the staff. But also, in addition to their influence on the board and people who have direct access to them through the various little groupings of, you know, registries, registrars, trademark holders, et cetera, is basically getting the community that works with the staff involved in reviewing the staff. In other organizations that I've been in, when there was a community-facing staff member, their manager would need to include some amount of review with those they serve as part of their reviewing process. So I see this as very much a two-sided thing. One, we have to make sure that they're free to talk and they're free to be transparent about what's going on. And two, though, we have to make sure that they have some accountability to the people that they're working with. The review still is owned by their ICANN manager, but it really needs to feed into, or rather have fed into, some of the community views of them and interactions with them. So.
Thanks very much, Avery. Carlos, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much. This is Carlos for the record. I put my name down in that group specifically as the main group I want to work on, but I come with a slightly different view. We have talked enough about the board and we have put in conditions now for the board, and there is this IRP discussion that is still going on Workstream 1. My view is particularly the different segments of the organization that might come into conflict with each other. I mean, we have the policy side, we have the technical side, the IANA functions, but we also have the compliance side on the contracts. And the income of the corporation depends on the people which they have contracts with. And then on top we have outreach, and the people are in different countries of the world, and I'm afraid they might be even colluding with the competitors of open GTLDs. They are sometimes very close to CCTLDs that don't have practices that I like. So I'm looking from the organizational point of view that there are no conflicts of interest between the different staff, between the different activities of ICANN, between the different divisions. I have always missed, since I was in HRT2, a clear organizational chart that separates the staff in a way that those conflicts don't happen. So that's the reason I'm on that one, and I will push for that agenda on top to everything that you have said. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carlos. We're really lucky to have you engaged on this issue. I really appreciate it. Klaus, you are next.
Hello. Yes, thank you. This is Klaus for the record. I just want to add to everything which has been said before that the reason why I signed up to this group is that I've observed over the last years a tendency of some minority of staff to take over functions and roles which are clearly the functions and roles of the communities they are supposed to serve, for example, in areas of outreach, capacity building, and things like that. And I think this is some very, very dangerous tendency that staff think that they have to manage the community and not understand that that their role is to service the community. And this is one of the reasons why I would like to work up on. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Klaus. I'm happy to hear you joined this particular working group or subgroup. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue? Any comments, questions? Okay, Stephen, let's go on to the next issue, which is actually very closely related, and that would be SOAC accountability, as in supporting organizations and advisory committees. As we are changing ICANN's structure such that the community holds more power than it did before the transition, before this creation of the empowered community with all these wonderful new community powers we have, along the lines of creating those powers, we also then have to say, well, wait a minute, we need to make sure that we as a community are in fact accountable. And there are some concerns, effects of the community, and issues like transparency and decision making. And so this is one of the work stream two issues where we have to sort of look at ourselves and others in the community and ask, are we doing things as transparently as we can? Are we being as accountable as we can? What can we do? And coming up with metrics for the entire ICANN community. I think this is an issue where we're going to need to see some reform of some parts of the ICANN community. For example, the Governmental Advisory Committee doesn't have any requirements that discussions be transparent, decisions be transparent, and I think this is an opportunity to push a little bit on that. There are certainly parts of the GNSO where that's true as well. So, you know, this is an important issue that we'll need to get some folks to spend some time on. Does anyone want to get in the queue on this one? Ah, I see Avery has her hand up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Avery again. So this is the third of the groups that I've signed up for with transparency and staff accountability. And in this one, I think one of my strong concerns is making sure that whatever is done in terms of accountability, we still maintain the bottom-up notion that is critical to the formation in the various SOs and ACs, while taking into account the greater accountability we need to have to the rest of the community and to larger community. But one of the things that I worry gets lost sometimes is that bottom-up nature and understanding how we sort of balance the bottom-up nature and the greater accountability. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Avery. I'm really glad you mentioned that issue of you know, bottom-up, also known as democratic. And, you know, I think this is one place where multi-stakeholderism can push a little bit on other forms of governance and really say, hey, look, we're going to be bottom-up, we're going to be democratic, that without the consent of the governance is illegitimate. And so, you know, we're trying to create a legitimate model of governance here, and therefore we require that it be bottom-up. And I think that's important that we always remember that, because, you know, time and time again, we might get a CEO or a board who wants to do things top-down because that's how they're used to doing it, and it's our job to really push back against that and insist upon bottom-up and democratic processes in everything that we do. Thanks. Farzi, I see you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
Thank you for the record. So I signed up for this group. I truly believe that we need to have accountability mechanisms and we need to be accountable to the community. These community constituencies, and I'm talking mainly about us, we already have mechanisms in place. We just have to highlight them. We have to see if they are implemented, and we have to work on that. So what I worry about this working group is that they come up with a plan that takes away the autonomy of the constituency from them and make the board even more, well, at the moment, the bylaws said that the board can have a say in the governance structure of the constituencies already, but I don't want to get more deeper into the whole of, like, board says how we are going to run our stuff. And the other thing is that, as you mentioned, Robin, DAC also have to be accountable. The problem is that the bylaws do not subject DAC to these accountability mechanisms, and they have to come up with the mechanisms themselves. What we could do, we could request and ask DAC what sort of mechanisms they've come up with, when they are going to come up with it, and like that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Farzi. I think you really hit the nail on the head here on where the danger lies on this issue. There is concern that this issue will be used to manage the community, to, you know, for the board and staff to shape the community image it would like it to be in. And I think that is the danger of this particular work stream issue. And so it is important that we watch out for that and try to prevent that from happening and make sure that it does retain or even have more of a bottom-up nature than we've had in the past. You know, we want to make progress, not just do as good as we've done in the past, but actually make progress on pushing democratic processes and governance forward. Okay, is there anything else anybody wanted to add on this issue of SOAC accountability? Not seeing anyone raise their hand. Let's move on. The next issue then would be reform of the ICANN Ombudsman's Office. This is an issue, for those who aren't familiar with the Ombudsman, it's an office where if community members feel like they've been treated unfairly, can go and lodge a complaint, and the Ombudsman will investigate or in some cases try to negotiate or mediate, sort of act as a dispute resolution provider, if you will, at ICANN. And there's been the office doesn't have sufficient independence from the organization to be able to be as objective and neutral as one would need to be to provide a truly neutral and fair perspective as someone in this role is supposed to do. So that's been one concern, and I think one of the reasons why this issue has been raised and flagged for Workstream 2 is the degree that the ICANN's legal department has with respect to managing the Ombudsman. Now, the Ombudsman will tell you that he can have access to any document at ICANN, but, of course, if he doesn't know that it exists, I'm not sure how he's going to find it. So there may be some power here, but that power could also be more useful, more independent, more neutral. So we'll need some people to volunteer to participate in this particular Workstream 2 issue on looking carefully at the Ombudsman's Office and what we can do to improve its effectiveness and serve the community better. I see Aubrey's got her hand up, so please, Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry for putting my hand up first on four issues. This is the last of the issues I signed up to be active in, though I signed up to be an observer on every issue. This one we have in the accountability proposals, you know, added the possibility of adding function to the Ombudsman. So that makes whatever critical nature it has even more so. And one of the things that's always concerned me is in a lot of places, Ombudsmen come in with a single long-term and it's not a renewed, it's a node thing. Because anytime you're dependent on your living being renewed by someone, you have a certain urge to make sure you don't piss them off too much. And I'm not making any accusations. I'm just saying it's sort of in a general nature of people. So forgive the assumption. But one of the things that I've noticed in ombudsman over the years is they start out as external people, but the proximity they have to staff and to being with staff and kind of sort of like staff eventually makes them staff-like. And that's something that, again, happens over time with the affinity of relationships, et cetera. So that's one of the things that I'm interested in looking at as we give the ombudsman more functions to deal with. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery, for bringing up that important point. I note Brett has made a good point in the chat here, which I will just read out. He says, in the bylaws discussions, I suggested that the ombudsman should possess the authority to serve decisions under challenge from a request for reconsideration if irreversible harm could result. This is currently the case for the IRP, though the ombudsman has no role in the IRP process. I was told this should be addressed in Workstream 2. I was highlighting it here so it doesn't get overlooked. So this is a good suggestion to think about, something that we could do with the ombudsman's office. I think, you know, the lawyers might have something to say. But all right, let's let them say it, and we'll have, you know, we can have the discussion. Is there anyone else who wants to chime in on this issue? All right, not seeing any hands. Let's go forth. The next issue is diversity at ICANN. And so this is an issue that comes in part from the public experts group, the PEG that was appointed, and they said, you know, ICANN really needs to be more diverse. You've got a lot of the same people, same mindsets with the same perspectives and the same backgrounds and the same interests, coming to the same decisions, and if ICANN is to be more accountable, it's going to have to be more diverse. And so trying to build in a community, a culture where there is more diversity of views, more diversity of perspectives, how this gets defined is very important. A lot of times when you hear diversity, you think, oh, you know, you just kind of want to roll your eyes because it just means, you know, more French speakers, sure, whatever. But this is important for an important issue for ICANN to be more accountable, is to hear the different perspectives from different walks of life, from people in different cultures and who have different things to say, and that is how ICANN will reach the best decisions that it can, is by including such a diversity of perspective in the deliberations. So this is an issue that we'll need some people to volunteer for. Did anybody want to weigh in, have any comments or questions on this issue? Farzi, yes, please, go ahead.
Hi, sorry, this is like my last intervention. I didn't sign up for this group, but one thing that we should consider, and there's a lot of hypocrisy going on in this diversity discussion. On one hand, they say, wonderful, we want diversity, we want people to come and join us. On the other hand, in their rules and for membership, they don't allow you to join them because you are an individual member, you are not an organization, or you don't reside in the country that you were born in. And, you know, there are all sorts of things that there's a hypocrisy going on in ICANN, that I see it clearly by those that want and championing diversity. So I think what we could look at in this diversity discussion is to look at how these constituencies and advisory groups and their rules can encourage diversity or impede diversity. Because ICANN as a corporation is doing its job, I would say that we have like this fellowship program and we have all sorts of kind of outreach and all that. We also have to look at ourselves, like our constituencies, our advisory group and all that. Thank you.
Thanks, Farzi. That's a really good point. And I think that this issue, this diversity issue, much like the transparency issue, we're going to find a lot of overlap in some of the other issues. And, you know, like you pointed out, that the issue of SOAC accountability and how are we and our members. I remember hearing not too long ago that there wasn't a single member of China in the intellectual property constituency. And that was, you know, pretty shocking that they didn't have not one. So I think that, again, this will be overlap, and as we look at SOAC accountability, and we'll want to consider things like diversity and how accessible are they and how welcoming are they. I think probably another issue would be language. I think it's often a chicken and an egg problem. We don't get an enormous amount of people who show up who can't converse in English, but that's in part because the language services that have been provided over the years. They're much better now, but they still aren't quite what they should be for somebody to really be able to join a working group and participate at a working group level with language barriers. I think that's a big issue that we could be tackled in diversity. Anyone else want to weigh in on this one? Okay, let's move on. The next issue is reviewing the cooperative engagement process, also known as the CEP, which is the first step to filing an independent review panel matter. This is sort of a leftover from Workstream 1 and our work on reform of the independent review panel, and we never quite got to flesh out what we needed to do on the CEP, so it's found its way, luckily, into Workstream 2. So this is a process that doesn't have a lot of has no transparency requirements at all. It doesn't have any rules or guidelines. It's pretty much I've participated in this process, so I know that you're completely at the whim of ICANN legal to tell you what to do next. I mean, they can, you know, literally say the next step in this process is for you to stand on one head or stand on one one foot and pat your head, and you'd pretty much say, oh, I have to do it because there is no written process, and the process unfortunately is used by ICANN's legal department to just extract information out of somebody before they go to litigation. And so it's sort of a discovery fishing expedition, one-sided. And, you know, you're not going to find anyone who's gone through a CEP and have anything good to say about it. It's just really a ripe for abuse and misuse by ICANN's legal department. And so that's an issue that needs to be worked on in Workstream 2. Does anyone want to weigh in on this one? Have some comments or questions? Okay, I don't see any. So let's continue with the final issue in Workstream 2, which is the guidelines for ICANN board standard of conduct, and this is associated with the board members. So there was some concern that now that the community has the right to remove board members, that, you know, the board's not going to know how they're supposed to behave and they're going to be recalled every other week for wearing the wrong color T-shirt, that sort of thing. No, I'm just sort of teasing. But there was concern concern about what kinds of things they would be recalled for, they could be removed for, what kinds of conduct was expected of them. And so we agreed to sort of come up with a guidelines for the standard of conduct, trying to give board members an idea of expectations when it comes to fulfilling their fiduciary duties and you know, investigating issues that they need to make decisions on, that sort of thing. I do have a concern that this issue is sort of being framed and pushed in a way that we use to limit the community's powers to remove board members, and so that's my concern for this issue, and we need to watch it and make sure that isn't how it ultimately evolves. Anybody would like to weigh in on this issue, have any comments, questions, concerns on this final issue? I see Carlos. Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. This is Carlos Robin. I'm no lawyer, but I think there are some basic things that should not happen. The other day I was reading the fight that the discussion on Amazon, you know, Amazon's panel, and they argued that the same people who made decisions about assigning new domain names took the negative decision in the governance committee against Amazon. I think that's very silly. I mean, that should not happen in a corporation like ICANN. So if things like that happen, it means there is need to have some good document on that. As I say, I'm not a specialist. I'm not signing up, but I've been in business long enough, and international panels, you know, when you go to this arbitration process, this is one thing that it's shameful to see it on paper. It would be for me, I mean, if I was part of the board of ICANN. It's absolutely silly. So there are some serious work to be done there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Carlos. Appreciate that. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue, the board's conduct, standard of conduct? Okay, not seeing any hands. That last issue of the nine Workstream 2 issues that had been flagged. So I hope that everyone found at least one of those issues interesting and worth working on. And so I would like to encourage you to sign up both on the NCSG sign-up sheet, which is in lower right-hand box on the screen, and then to sign up for the actual CCWG working group. And I pasted the email in the chat, which I can do again to sign up for that, to get working on some of these issues. So then let's go forward to the next issue on the agenda. Oh, I see some hands. Carlos, is that an old hand or a new hand?
This is a new hand, Robin. Just a clarification. What is this separation of class if you sign in the pink part, in the orange part, or in the blue part? Can you tell us something about that?
Are you? I'm sorry. Did somebody say something?
Sorry, I interjected. That is also what I raised my hand about to explain that.
Okay, Aubrey, please.
Yeah, and I was going to explain it in a slightly different context. Basically, there's setting yourself up as an observer, and as observer, you get to be on the list and listen to all the discussions, but you don't have to fill in an SOI, and you don't have to, you know, your attendance isn't made, you're not invited to speak at the meetings. And then there's the participant part, which I think is the green part, where you actually have to have an SOI and sign up. And the thing I wanted to point out is, if you're not sure, signing up as an observer is great, and all you need to do to transition from observer to participant is let Grace or whomever know that, oops, I want to participate now, and then you switch from one list to another. So that, you know, if you're not sure, sign up as an observer and watch it. And then if it all of a sudden you notice your blood boiling, you know, or you got something to say that you don't see being said, you know, then take that extra leap. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Avery. Thanks for explaining the different statuses in the working group and how participation works. Okay, not seeing any other hands. Let's move forward. The next issue would be sort of the NCSG work stream to working methods. So I'd like to make a proposal for how we can manage this, what is obviously an enormous amount of work, this enormous workload. So I thought we could have regular monthly NCSG accountability focused webinars where, you know, basically once a month we have a meeting very similar to this one, and we can really dive deeply into the accountability working group issues and sub issues. And so, you know, we could, one possibility would be to do this, say around next month around this time, July 14th, and then every fourth Tuesday after that. This is, you know, really just a suggestion to sort of get the ball rolling and to get a thing about, you know, how this would work. But I think it's important that irrespective of the date and the time that we do have a focused monthly conversation about this. These issues and the progress being made in the working group in general. I think we should really try to do most of our work in NCSG, try to do most of our work on our dedicated email list. We did set up a dedicated CCWG accountability email list for our members to let me just post the link in here. There it is. This is a dedicated email list where we can have a lot of our discussions. It's like all of our policy lists. It's open. It's accessible to anyone on the web. It's archived. It's transparent. So we could do a lot. We could do our work there and then also report back to the main list as needed. It's just I think we'll have a lot of sort of smaller sub-discussions that we don't want to use the main list for, because there are people who are not focused on this issue and might not want to hear all of the little details as we put things together. I'd like to see if we can get volunteers to serve as, without really having a better term, say a rapporteur on each one of these Workstream 2 sub-issues to try to hold the pen and drive, hold the whip and drive the forces within the NCSG, as it were, to try to help us to strategize and work with the other stakeholder groups and advisory committees where we might have common objectives and to work together. So, you know, if we could have somebody, one or two people from the NCSG on each one of these sub-issues who can really try to manage the process for us, much like Tatiana and Niels have been doing on the human rights issue. It's proved so remarkably effective just having a couple people who are really focused on one sub-issue and able to help guide the rest of us into doing what we need to do to get the kind of recommendations and change that we need. So the road to Helsinki and ICANN 56, folks will be leaving next week for Helsinki. The CCWG accountability will meet all day on Sunday the 26th in Helsinki, and we're really going to tackle these Workstream 2 issues. So for those people who can be in Helsinki, that's an important meeting to be at, and there is remote participation. And I will not, unfortunately, be able to attend the Helsinki meeting. ICANN decided not to fund the travel costs anymore of the CCWG members. So, so I will be participating remotely in the CCWG work in Helsinki. But, you know, we'll certainly be online and available and, you know, accessible with you guys who will be there. And there'll be a couple meetings throughout the course of the week as well in Helsinki, where they'll truly start to try to dive deeply into some of the work stream to sub-issues. So I think it's important to be there to begin to set the scope. ICANN staff is currently preparing a number of issue papers on each one of the sub-issues, and we should expect to see those before Helsinki, and those are intended to guide our discussions in Helsinki. And again, let's try to remember that work stream one is not done. We've got the implementation of all of these issues. The bylaws need to be actually affected. The independent review panel process has set up an implementation team that meets every Tuesday, and you know we're trying to come up with the rules for the new independent review panel process. And so we're not done with work stream one, and we need to figure out how to manage, you know, the workload, the enormous workload of both work stream one and work stream two at the same time. let me just stop here and take a breath, see if anybody had any comments or suggestions on questions about this, how we can work going forward on these issues. How do you guys feel about having trying to organize a monthly webinar where we can go over the progress on the issues? I see a green tick from Carlos. That's good. And a green tick from Aiden. Okay, we're seeing some no red ticks, only green ticks. That's good. All right, so let's try to do that and really try to use the mailing list that we've set up. It's been rather quiet for the last couple of months, but let's turn that around and you know, get busy to work on these Workstream 2 issues. I also thought we should talk about how should the CCWG Accountability approach these work stream issues and manage its workload. I know they've talked about going down to meetings only twice a month, every 2 weeks, and having the subgroups report to the main group. There's concern about, as we mentioned before, about the decreased transparency of the Workstream 2 issue. That's something that we need to flag on this issue of how it should work is not decrease the transparency. It should continue at the same, if not improved transparency than what we've had in Workstream 1. Dividing the issues, there is some concern that, you know, dividing this into 9 different issues and then is going to be really hard for us to manage and to keep track of everything going on in each one of the different issues. So that's why I'm really hoping we can have small teams or in each one of these sub-issues with somebody sort of holding the pen, the whip on that particular sub-issue. Any other comments on how the CCWG should approach the Workstream 2 issues and manage its workload? Okay, I don't see any. Well, that was the last substantive issue on our agenda for today. The only other thing is any other business. So was there anything that anyone wanted to add on this? Okay, I see a couple of hands raised. Avery and then Niels. Please, Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to talk about one other thing in terms of how we work on all of this, and that's not only on mailing lists, but on chat and a rocket.chat space, a group chat space with the ability to thread different discussions and have different discussions was created. And I'm wondering whether that's a useful tool to see if we can use that as well as lists for those quick questions and quick conversations that, you know, don't need to go into longer mail streams. I'm just wondering if we can also start to use some of those other techniques while we're putting all this stuff together. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Yes, so it looks like Aiden just posted the address to that chat, ncuc.chat, in the chat box there. And that's a good idea. If we can sign up a chat and try to use that. I haven't signed up for that yet, but this will give me a good reason to do so. Anybody else have any comments on that suggestion or on the working method in general or on any other business in general? I see Niels is next in the queue. Go ahead, Niels.
Yes, for all of those who cannot live without ICANN calls or just have a profound interest, especially in human rights, and just want some time to make some coffee and refresh themselves, in 30 minutes, the call for the cross-community working party on ICANN's corporate and social responsibility to respect human rights starts. We always keep the call under an hour. That's a promise. Great value for your time. Looking forward to see you all there in this channel, so you can even just stay online and still make that meeting. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Niels. That's great. I can just leave this window open and in half an hour, rinse and repeat. Okay, was there anyone else who wanted to make a comment before we call this meeting to a close? Nope. Okay. Well, thank you all. I greatly appreciate your willingness to go through these issues with me and consider signing up for one or more of the subgroups and participating in this very important working group. Thank you very much. We can disconnect now.
Thank you very much, everyone, for attending. Brett, you may now stop the recording. Thank you for your time today. Thank you.
Recording started.
Thank you very much, Bryce. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. This is the CCWG Accountability Workstream 2 call on Thursday, 17th of June, 2016. On the call today, we have Robin Gross, Carlos Gutierrez, Corinne Pat, Tapani Taravainen, Yolta Singus, Klaus Stoll, Neil Ten Orva, Rafik Damak, Avery Doria, Aiden Ferdelin, Fazani Badi, GK Kabir. And from staff, we have Adam Pick and myself, Mariam Bakoshi. I would like to remind all participants to please state your name before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much. Over to you, Robin.
Thanks very much, Mariam. Thanks to everyone who's joined this call. As you know, we need to go over some of the work stream two issues in the CCWG Accountability Working Group. Let me very quickly review the agenda and see if there's anything folks want to add. Okay, so I thought we'd talk about where we are now and what's up next for the CCWG Accountability Group. And then let's just dive straight into the nine work stream two issues. And while we're talking about each one, let's talk about what some possible goals and desired outcomes could be for each one of these sub-issues and whom from NCSG will join these different subgroups and work on these different issues. So the nine Workstream 2 sub-issues are increased transparency at ICANN, which includes things like the document information disclosure policy reform, getting more transparency in board deliberations, instituting a culture of transparency at ICANN, having more transparency around lobbying and the discussions with governments that ICANN engages in, and improvements to ICANN's whistleblower policy. So that's a big meaty one right there. The second issue is creating a framework of interpretation for ICANN's new commitment to respect human rights. Influence, the third issue is to discuss the influence of ICANN's jurisdiction on operational policies and accountability mechanisms. The fourth issue is staff accountability. The fifth issue is SOAC accountability. The sixth issue is reform of the Ombudsman's Office. The seventh issue is diversity at ICANN. The eighth issue is reviewing the cooperative engagement process, which is the first step to filing an independent review panel manner. And the ninth issue are guidelines for ICANN board standard of conduct associated with the removal of board members. So those are the nine issues that have been flagged for work stream two. So that's a lot. So we should also then talk about how we can work on these issues collectively as a stakeholder group. And so I wanted to propose a working method. And then we can talk about how should the CCWG Accountability Group approach the work stream two issues and try to manage the workload, because it is a large workload, and we're not done with work stream one entirely. So there's an enormous amount of work yet to be done on these issues, and then any other business. So was there anything anybody wanted to add to this agenda or any questions or concerns on it? Okay, not hearing any. Let's just dive straight in. So where are we now, and what's next for the group? So we just earlier this spring completed a quick recap here for those who are new. We completed the Workstream 1 recommendations, which are recommendations that are directly tied to the IANA transition, and those went to the board and were approved, and then they went to the NTIA, and the NTIA has approved the plan. So we're hoping that the Workstream 1 implementation will be done in the coming months, and so we'll be doing that in parallel with Workstream 2. So with respect to Workstream 2, we are supposed to have sort of a kickoff meeting in Helsinki where we begin to scope out the issues and start thinking about some of the recommendations and dividing up into subgroups with different people working on the different issues and then reporting back to the CCWG Accountability Main Group about progress. I think that the plan, and it is very tentative, but at this point in time, the targets in terms of a timeline would be to have the sort of initial scoping of the issues done shortly after the Helsinki meeting, and then coming up with our draft proposals. That would be sometime around Hyderabad in November. And then we would refine those proposals based on public comment. And the timeline for that discussion would be next March, which would be in line with the Copenhagen meeting. And then the final approval of the report for chartering organization approval is targeted for sometime around the Johannesburg meeting in June of 2017. So we've got, you know, more than a year, and I think this is a bit ambitious of a timeline. Like all of the other timelines that have been presented to us, it inevitably slips. But you know, we try to have a tough timeline to begin with to sort of keep us going as we continue with the work. So that's sort of where we are and where we're headed on these different overall issues. Now let's talk about the very specific issues, and the first one being transparency. And I don't know if folks noticed, but I've created sort of a volunteer sign-up sheet for different members of the NCSG to just sign up for some of the different issues and to help work on some of these different issues. So the link is over in the notes section on the Adobe Connect room. So feel free to sign up to that at any time. I'm going to repost it right now in the chat, too, in case somebody can't see it. Oh, Farzi beat me to it. Thank you. Okay. So the first issue is transparency, increased transparency. This is really one of the most important accountability issues that we can work on because it is just so fundamental to all of the other kinds of accountability mechanisms that have been created. We have to know what is happening in order to be able to comment on them and or to hold someone to account for them. If that which we don't know is going on, we can't very well correct. So transparency is really one of the most important things that this group is set out to do, and it is unfortunate that it is in work stream two. However, it was seen as such a large and broad and sweeping sort of reform that needs to take place that it couldn't really wait or it couldn't really be done in time for the transition, and it's not directly tied to the IANA transition, although that's debatable. So that was an issue that got pushed into work stream two. So there were a number of sub-issues that the working group has already identified and were included in our report. And if you take a look at Annex 12 of the final report, they go into a little bit of detail on what is meant by some of these issues, what we're trying to get at. So when it comes to transparency, the issue, there are several different sub-issues here. One is the reform of the document information disclosure policy, the DIDP, which is ICANN's policy where they're supposed to make information public. Think of it sort of like a freedom of information request policy. However, what it ends up being is just a catalog of reasons for why ICANN just denies access to all the information. You know, everything comes back saying, sorry, this is too burdensome. Sorry, this would be confidential information. We don't want to release it. And there really isn't any outside or independent analysis or judgment done about these kinds of determinations. And it's really entirely within the hands of ICANN's legal department to decide what gets disclosed and what doesn't get disclosed. And so there's a lot of concern about this policy and the record that this policy has of blocking access to information instead of turning it over. So that's one of the issues that's ripe for reform in work stream two on transparency. Another, actually the issue of creating a culture of transparency at ICANN, it's not really a sort of a separate sub-issue, but it is something that we're trying to do overall with all of these sort of sub-issues within transparency itself, is to sort of change the way ICANN operates from a default of everything is closed and only if you can provide just cause and maybe a battalion of lawyers will you get access to information, to one where the default is everything is open with the exception of limited, narrow, documented exceptions that can be reviewed by independent parties. So this creating a culture of transparency is really something that falls into each one of these sub-issues. And one of the most important ones is the issue of increasing transparency with respect to board deliberations. You know, the board mailing lists are not public the way the GNSO Council mailing lists are public. The board calls where they discuss these issues and make decisions on these issues, deliberate on these issues, are not public the way the GNSO Council has to do all of its work in public. And the way legitimate lawmakers or policymakers in today's day and age, in fact, have to do their work in public. So really trying to change the way the board operates to more transparency and trying to understand its thinking and why it's coming to the decisions that it's coming to is one of the sub-issues. Another one of the sub-issues in transparency is the trying to increase transparency with respect to ICANN's discussions with governments and the lobbying that is done. There's been a number of press reports in the last couple of years that have shown ICANN hasn't been entirely honest with the community about the amount of money that it's spending on lobbying governments and what it's lobbying for and how does this in fact relate to the ICANN's limited mission or what the community cares about. So there's been very widespread calls for more transparency with respect to these kinds of discussions, especially as ICANN moves into a much more political sphere as it is heading into, has been heading into. The final sub-issue with respect to transparency, and then I'm going to stop and open for comments and discussions, is the improvements to ICANN's whistleblower policy, which is basically when somebody discovers that something at ICANN is not appropriate or not legal or violating somebody's privacy or violating some law or engaging in some sort of egregious conduct, how can an insider blow the whistle on that without feeling like they are going to face retribution from the organization that they work for. So there has been some concern that policy isn't broad enough. It isn't we haven't really looked at that policy in detail, and so I think that, you know, that's obviously the sort of the first thing to do is to see just what it is and how is it being used and where is it failing or not. So those are a number of issues on the first issue of increasing transparency at ICANN. And so we've got a lot of work to do on these issues. And so let me just stop here and open it up for others to say, to join in and add what they would like to contribute on this issue or what they would like to see as an outcome on this issue or anything along those lines. And I see we've got a queue starting. So we've got Carlos and then Farzi. Carlos, go ahead.
Thank you, Robin. This is Carlos for the record. Thank you very much. I don't know if it fits into this chapter, but I want to mention one thing, and that's the lack of data, hard data, and why ICANN is so slow in publishing data about the new GTLDs, while others in the community have access to the data, offer software to analyze data, etc. It's very strange. I'm talking about my experience in the competition review, where any request for data directly to ICANN says no, because we have confidentiality with registrars and registries, and they don't give data. But you turn around, and there are a lot of people producing reports, analyses, and selling software based on the root data. So I think it's very strange, and I think the source of authoritative data on how the market is doing should be ICANN and not secondary sources. And I don't know if it fits into transparency, but for me, or for economic purposes, for market purposes, I really have a big question mark if that should not be discussed. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carlos, and thanks for bringing that up, because I think that is directly tied to transparency. You know, ICANN, like you said, has all of the data. They hold all the numbers, and they choose to release numbers that make them look good or that will make the argument for the objective that they want, and they withhold numbers that don't. And so, you know, everybody else is at a significant disadvantage of simply, you know, knowing what the facts are, and the ability to control the facts and shape access to information is very, very powerful. I wonder, I'm not sure, but I wonder if this is something that would fall under the reform of the Document Information Disclosure Policy, the DIDP. If, you know, trying to use that policy as a means of accessing this kind of data would be appropriate. So that's something to think about, and I hope you'll work on this issue. Farzi's next in the queue. Go ahead, Farzi.
Hi, my name is Farzi. I have a cold. Sorry, I'm going to bite you for the record. So I just want to say what I'm going to focus on. What I'm going to focus on is fixing the defined conditions for non-disclosure, which is, so ICANN has these several clauses of conditions for non-disclosure. And these are like very obscure, and most of the time they use that to reject requests for documents. One of the most important one that I think I'm going to focus on is this, that ICANN reserves the right to deny disclosure of information under conditions not designated above, which refers to the clauses, and then determines that the harm in disclosing the information outweighs the public interest in this closing the information. So basically, ICANN is in charge of saying that, okay, establishing that, oh, this is against public interest, so I'm not going to disclose it, which I think should be fixed. And also, a couple of words in the clause is that they are obscure, and we need to focus on that. And then the other thing that I think I don't know if we can focus on it, on transparency in this session, is that the most of the time the CCWGs should be also subject to transparency measures. And I have asked this in one of the CCWGs. I have asked for more transparency, which we kind of did get there a little bit, but we didn't get fully what we wanted. I think Avery is more experienced in that sort of HRT, but I think we should also work on the CCWGs and working groups of transparency. Thank
Hi, can you hear me? Sorry about that. I was on mute there. thanks very much, Farzi, for raising that issue. The issue of transparency of how the CCD works itself is an extremely important issue, and you know, we're it is the group that is supposed to be setting the standards of transparency for everybody else. So, you know, it gosh darn better have pretty good transparency standards itself. So I think that we've had different moments of wonderful transparency where our meetings were open and everyone could join in and participate, and they were recorded and transcribed, and there were notes taken, and people were given opportunities to object for a couple of meetings to decisions before they were taken. And so I think there have been many aspects that were really wonderful about the transparency, but some that have not been so wonderful. And unfortunately, it looks like Workstream 2, the proposal that was put forward by the co-chairs and the staff a couple of weeks ago, seems to be less transparent, that we would be working less transparently than we did in Workstream 1. For example, they proposed that they do not make the transcriptions available, or is it the recordings? It's one and not the other, available for these calls, which is a bit problematic for a number of people. Yes, it's no transcripts. That's right. Thank you. So, you know, that's caused a lot of problems. You know, we're trying to say, hey, we need to be transparent in our operations, and we're going to be saying, hey, board, you better be transparent, and hey, community and staff, you better be transparent, but we're not going to provide transcriptions. So, you know, I think a number of us in the group have pushed back on that. So I think, but I think that, and I'm not sure that's the way it's going to turn out because that we pushed back on that. But I think that you're right, Farzi. This is an issue we need to pay attention to, and we need to make sure that our work is transparent. There have been a little bit of concern about the what's going on with the lawyers and the co-chairs. Nobody has any idea of what's happening in those discussions, also with the staff. So there are some places where there are sort of black holes and decisions are being made and come back to us still, and we need to watch out for those. And in addition to simple issues like, you know, making sure there are transcripts and recordings and notes taken, that sort of thing. Was there anything else that on this issue of transparency? I know it's a big media issue, and we're going to need, quite frankly, an army of people working on this issue alone. but I do think it is single-handedly one of the most important issues, that if we can fix the transparency issue, a lot of the other accountability problems that I can become less significant, because if there are less shadows, less misdeeds can be done in them. So I want to encourage people in particular to sign up for the transparency issue. Anything else on this? I don't see any hands. Okay. Let's move on to the next issue, which is the human rights issue, creating a framework of interpretation for ICANN's new commitment to respect human rights. So this is an issue that, frankly, the NCSG should be very proud of, because it is largely because of the NCSG, that this issue of ICANN having to respect human rights has made its way into the bylaws, even if it is provisionally and dependent upon definition and all these other little provisional assurances. It is actually rather significant. However, it is also a potential for great danger, so we need to be very careful and how we proceed on this issue. And we're very lucky that we've had a number of people who have been very active on this issue, in particular Niels from Article 19 and Tatiana have both been very active on this issue and have helped to shape the dialogue and the recommendations. And so I would like to ask if one of them would like to sort of talk about this issue and how they see this issue in Workstream 2 and what we need of our members on this issue. Niels, I see your hand is up. Why don't you go for it?
Hi, all. Great to have us all together to warm up a bit for the Helsinki experience. Thanks for putting all this together, Robin. And there is some great work ahead. We're pretty organized. That's really nice because we have been working on this now for quite a while in the cross-community working part in ICANN's corporate and social responsibility to respect human rights, where we have a specific subgroup dedicated to Workstream 2, where we've been working on the historical references and uses of what a framework of interpretation is or what are possible instruments. We've been working on a visualization. We've been writing papers to think about this. So we are quite on track. And what I think is really important to for the upcoming work is to keep it very sizable. We should not try to create a human rights policy in Workstream 2. No, 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 no. As Tatjana has really clearly worked out, is that the framework of interpretation is really a framework of interpretation of the bylaw. It should explain word for word what the bylaw means, and we should not go beyond that. And the bylaw is not that complicated. So we'll be talking about instruments. What does respect mean? What does protect mean? And we'll be discussing a lot about Ruggie principles and the history of human rights. But we also got some very good people, so I am pretty pretty much trusted it will go okay. We also have done a lot of scoping on the risks for content and trademarks finding its ways into there. We also written quite a lot about that. So I think that is definitely something we need to watch out for, but it's also something on which we've been working. So there is a place within the NCSC where we have been prepping. Prepping is underway, and we're always very happy to get more people in our little group to make the work better. I hope this sets out a bit of work, and I see Tatjana is up there as well, who will say anything I said much better and also say the things that I forgot.
Thanks, Niels. Tatjana, you have the floor.
Hear me? Tatjana Tropina is speaking. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you.
Sorry. Can you hear me?
Yes, Tatjana, we can hear you, although it's kind of a low sound.
I will try to be very loud. If you, okay, so if you don't hear me, just let me know. I'm basically screaming right now. So exactly what Niels told. We have our little group, and we are going to, like, we are having two tracks. First, what we can propose, like, for example, what framework of interpretation is, what kind of instruments we might consider, or at least not like they will be applicable, but which will define the scope of this human rights commitment. Which instruments will define what is enforced, what is protected, in terms of what is not applicable, what is applicable. And the second track is the problems we might anticipate. As, for example, Robin said, that it might be a danger, this law, like, for example, content regulation. So we are preparing that to, like, what would be our arguments against. So, and as Niels already told, we have this group, we are working on this, anyone can join at any time, and yes, guys, we need you, and if you can distribute this information in your network, that we need people. Sometimes drafters, sometimes force of numbers, we need new perspectives, so we will be welcoming anyone there. Thanks. Basically, I think Niels already told everything, and only if there are any questions, we can answer them. I'm finished.
Thank you very much, Tatjana. I really appreciate that. Was there anyone else who wanted to ask a question or make a comment on the human rights issue in work stream two? A lot of important work to be done there, so I think we'll get some bodies signed up to work in that one as well. Going once, going twice. So let's go on to the next issue, which is, it says up there, it says jurisdiction of ICANN headquarters, but that's actually not correct. It is jurisdiction, it is ICANN sort of jurisdiction in the sense of how does the legal jurisdiction of impact ICANN policies, ICANN operations, ICANN's ability to exercise the accountability mechanisms. So it technically isn't at all about the what's the legal jurisdiction for ICANN headquarters. However, there are a lot of folks in GAC who are very unsatisfied with ICANN being headquartered in the United States and would like to see this issue become the issue of how and where to change ICANN's the jurisdiction of ICANN's headquarters. So, you know, you kind of have to be prepared for that conversation, even though that really isn't the way that the Workstream 2 issue on jurisdiction is supposed to go. Does anybody have anything they want to talk about this particular issue on jurisdiction? I think it's incredibly important. I see Farzi's got her hands up. Okay, go ahead, Farzi. I'll stop.
Hi, Farzi and Farzi for the record. So for the jurisdiction, when I looked at it, and I looked at it a long time ago, to be honest, but when I looked at the jurisdiction problem and I look at the government's argument or what we have to look at the jurisdiction and see whether ICANN should be headquartered in California or not, or what sort of implications the ICANN jurisdiction has, what I see is not, I don't understand what the practical implications are and what they are worried about. They never say why they are worried that ICANN is incorporated in the U.S., or if they just very generally say for accountability issues. What I think, I have joined the jurisdiction group because I want to understand what their arguments are. For example, France and Brazil strongly argue that ICANN's jurisdiction is an important matter for WS2. And also, I think it's a matter of their sovereignty as well. They want to weaken U.S. sovereignty over DLS. But why? For what reason? What has? I don't understand the reason. So what I would like to focus on is to see what sort of implications jurisdiction has for ICANN and its accountability, and see I want to see what sort of arguments they have.
Thanks very much, Farzi. Milton, you're next. Go ahead.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Go ahead.
Okay. So I just noted that I signed up for the jurisdiction group. I think it's the only one I'll be able to sign up for. I share many of Farzana's questions about or reasons for being on that. We do want to find out what the governments and people who worry about jurisdiction, what arguments they're making. But I think I do have a better sense of why they're concerned about jurisdiction. And it does have some legitimate issues in there, in the sense that, control should, for example, Congress pass legislation regulating a corporation in U.S. jurisdiction, it could influence policies or operations in ways that we might view as, from a multi-stakeholder perspective, as illegitimate. And there is this idea of the that Pranesh has brought up, which I think is a valid idea, even though he didn't do a very good job of promoting it, of jurisdictional resiliency, so that, you know, if we ICANN's headquarters is in the U.S., then maybe the root zone manager's jurisdiction might be somewhere else. So we might want to keep an eye on the root zone management agreement to see if that is open-ended and allows for contractors from different jurisdictions to at least compete for the RZM contract. And there may be ways in which, you know, U.S. law, U.S. jurisdiction could interfere with the what is supposed to be a non-sovereign, globalized policymaking process. So I think this is definitely an area that is worth paying attention to. I'm not sure how much influence it will have, but I think it's definitely an interesting area.
Thanks very much, Milton, and thanks for volunteering to join on that issue. I'm happy to hear that. Anybody else have anything that they want to add on the jurisdiction issue? It's going to be a battle. Okay, I don't see any hands or hearing anyone, so let's go on to the next issue, which is staff accountability. This is an interesting issue. This is sort of in line with the problem that many have commented on at ICANN, how the staff sort of leads the board rather than the board leading the staff. And so one of, you know, the way it typically works in typical organizations is that, you know, the board's in charge and the staff has to take direction from the board. But ICANN is a very unusual organization, and it has evolved in such a way that, you know, there are new board members in and out all the time, but there is a handful of hardcore, very senior level, often in the legal department or VPs, staff members who really know where all the bodies are buried and know what information to tell the board in order to get the answer from the board that they would like. So the board is very much managed by the staff. And so the typical response of, well, the board is supposed to manage the staff, so we don't need to manage we don't need to work on staff accountability, really doesn't apply when we're talking about ICANN, because it isn't a typical organization. The staff really has been able to manage the board. And so this is an issue that I think will also have some overlap with other issues. For example, the transparency issue. I expect we'll see transparency a lot of places, but I think it's one that if we had a better understanding about how staff makes their decisions, what the thought process is, how decisions are taken and what the issues are and what the information that they accept as input and use to evaluate will provide us with a lot more information about understanding how ICANN actually operates. So the issue of really trying to make sure that staff treats members of the community equally and without favoritism, depending upon who's more powerful or who could offer some sort of goodie. You know, these kinds of issues really need to be taken up in Workstream 2 on this issue. And I see we've got a queue forming, so I'm going to stop here and hear what others have to say. I see Avery, and then Carlos, and then Klaus. Okay, Avery, you've got the floor.
Okay, thanks. This is Avery speaking. In addition to everything you said, I think that there's, as you say, first of all, there's a very tight linkage with the transparency, not only the notion of a culture of
of transparency that applies also to staff action, but the whole whistleblowing and making sure that that works, that it's effective, and that it's safe goes into the accountability of the staff. But also, in addition to their influence on the board and people who have direct access to them through the various little groupings of, you know, registries, registrars, trademark holders, et cetera, is basically getting the community that works with the staff involved in reviewing the staff. In other organizations that I've been in, when there was a community-facing staff member, their manager would need to include some amount of review with those they serve as part of their reviewing process. So I see this as very much a two-sided thing. One, we have to make sure that they're free to talk and they're free to be transparent about what's going on. And two, though, we have to make sure that they have some accountability to the people that they're working with. The review still is owned by their ICANN manager, but it really needs to feed into, or rather have fed into, some of the community views of them and interactions with them. So.
Thanks very much, Avery. Carlos, you have the floor.
Yes, thank you very much. This is Carlos for the record. I put my name down in that group specifically as the main group I want to work on. But I come with a slightly different view. We have talked enough about the board and we have put in conditions now for the board. And there is this IRP discussion that is still going on Workstream 1. My view is particularly the different segments of the organization that might come into conflict with each other. I mean, we have the policy side, we have the technical side, the IANA functions, but we also have the compliance side on the contracts. And the income of the corporation depends on the people which they have contracts with. And then on top we have outreach, and the people are in different countries of the world, and I'm afraid they might be even colluding with the competitors of open GTLDs. They are sometimes very close to CCTLDs that don't have practices that I like. So I'm looking from the organizational point of view that there are no conflicts of interest between the different staff, between the different activities of ICANN, between the different divisions. I have always missed, since I was in ATRT2, a clear organizational chart that separates the staff in a way that those conflicts don't happen. So that's the reason I'm on that one, and I will push for that agenda on top to everything that you have said. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Carlos. We're really lucky to have you engaged on this issue. I really appreciate it. Klaus, you are next.
Hello. Yes, thank you. This is Klaus for the record. I just want to add to everything which has been said before that the reason why I signed up to this group is that I've observed over the last years a tendency of some minority of staff to take over functions and roles which are clearly the functions and roles of the communities they are supposed to serve, for example, in areas of outreach, capacity building, and things like that. And I think this is some very, very dangerous tendency that staff think that they have to manage the community and not understand that that their role is to serve the communities. And this is one of the reasons why I would like to work up, on. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Klaus. I'm happy to hear you joined this particular working group or subgroup. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue? Any comments, questions? Okay, see, let's go on to the next issue, which is actually very closely related, and that would be SOAC accountability, as in supporting organizations and advisory committees. As we are changing ICANN's structure such that the community holds more power than it did before the transition, before this creation of the empowered community with all these wonderful new community powers we have, along the lines of creating those powers, we also then have to say, well, wait a minute, we need to make sure that we as a community are in fact accountable. And there are some concerns, effects of the community, and issues like transparency and decision making. And so this is one of the work stream two issues where we have to sort of look at ourselves and others in the community and ask, are we doing things as transparently as we can? Are we being as accountable as we can? What can we do? And coming up with metrics for the entire ICANN community. I think this is an issue where we're going to need to see some reform of some parts of the ICANN community. For example, the Governmental Advisory Committee doesn't have any requirements that discussions be transparent, decisions be transparent, and I think this is an opportunity to push a little bit on that. There are certainly parts of the GNSO where that's true as well. So, you know, this is an important issue that we'll need to get some folks to spend some time on. Does anyone want to get in the queue on this one? Ah, I see Avery has her hand up. Go ahead, please.
Hi, this is Avery again. So this is the third of the groups that I've signed up for with transparency and staff accountability. And in this one, I think one of my strong concerns is making sure that whatever is done in terms of accountability, we still maintain the bottom-up notion that is critical to the formation in the various SOs and ACs, while taking into account the greater accountability we need to have to the rest of the community and to larger community. But one of the things that I worry gets lost sometimes is that bottom-up nature and understanding how we sort of balance the bottom-up nature and the greater accountability. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Avery. I'm really glad you mentioned that issue of you know, bottom-up, also known as democratic. And, you know, I think this is one place where multi-stakeholderism can push a little bit on other forms of governance and really say, hey, look, we're going to be bottom-up, we're going to be democratic, that without the consent of the governed, governance is illegitimate. And so, you know, we're trying to create a legitimate model of governance here, and therefore we require that it be bottom-up. And I think that that's important that we always remember that, because, you know, time and time again we might get a CEO or a board who wants to do things top-down because that's how they're used to doing it, and it's our job to really push back against that and insist upon bottom-up and democratic processes in everything that we do. Thanks. Farzi, I see you've got your hand up. Go ahead.
Sorry, thank you for the record. So I signed up for this group. I truly believe that we need to have accountability mechanisms and we need to be accountable to the community. And these community constituencies, and I'm talking mainly about us. We already have mechanisms in place. We just have to highlight them. We have to see if they are implemented, and we have to work on that. So what I worry about this working group is that they come up with a plan that takes away the autonomy of the constituency from them and makes
think the board is in more, well, at the moment, the bylaw said that the board can have a say in the governance structure of the constituencies already, but I don't want to get more deeper into the whole of, like, board says how we are going to run our stuff. And the other thing is that, as you mentioned, Rob and Jack also have to be accountable. The problem is that the bylaws do not subject GAC to these accountability mechanisms, and they have to come up with the mechanisms themselves. What we could do, we could request and ask GAC what sort of mechanisms they've come up with, when they are going to come up with it, and like that. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Farzi. I think you really hit the nail on the head here on where the danger lies on this issue. There is concern that this issue will be used to manage the community, to, you know, for the board and staff to shape the community image it would like it to be in. And I think that is the danger of this particular work stream issue. And so it is important that we watch out for that and try to prevent that from happening and make sure that it does retain or even have more of a bottom-up nature than we've had in the past. You know, we want to make progress, not just do as good as we've done in the past, but actually make progress on pushing democratic processes and governance forward. Okay, is there anything else anybody wanted to add on this issue of SOAC accountability? Not seeing anyone raise their hand. Let's move on. The next issue then would be reform of the ICANN Ombudsman's Office. This is an issue, for those who aren't familiar with the Ombudsman, it's an office where community members feel like they've been treated unfairly, can go and lodge a complaint, and the Ombudsman will investigate or in some cases try to negotiate or mediate, sort of act as a dispute resolution provider, if you will, at ICANN. And there's been some, the office doesn't have sufficient independence from the organization to be able to be as objective and neutral as one would need to be to provide a truly neutral and fair perspective as someone in this role is supposed to do. So that's been one concern, and I think one of the reasons why this issue has been raised and flagged for Workstream 2 is the degree that the ICANN's legal department has with respect to managing the Ombudsman. Now, the Ombudsman will tell you that he can have access to any document at ICANN, but of course, if he doesn't know that it exists, I'm not sure how he's going to find it. So there may be some power here, but that power could also be more useful, more independent, more neutral. So we'll need some people to volunteer to participate in this particular Workstream 2 issue on looking carefully at the Ombudsman's Office and what we can do to improve its effectiveness and serve the community better. I see Aubrey's got her hand up, so please, Aubrey, go ahead.
Yeah, sorry for putting my hand up first on four issues. This is the last of the issues I signed up to be active in, though I signed up to be an observer on every issue. This one, we have in the accountability proposals, you know, added the possibility of adding function to the Ombudsman. So that makes whatever critical nature it has even more so. And one of the things that's always concerned me is in a lot of places, Ombudsmen come in with a single long term, and it's not a renewed, it's a node thing. Because anytime you're dependent on your living being renewed by someone, you have a certain urge to make sure you don't piss them off too much. And I'm not making any accusations. I'm just saying it's sort of in a general nature of people. So forgive the assumption. But one of the things that I've noticed in Ombudsman over the years is they start out as external people, but the proximity they have to staff and to being with staff and kind of sort of like staff eventually makes them staff-like. And that's something that, again, happens over time with the affinity of relationships, et cetera. So that's one of the things that I'm interested in looking at as we give the Ombudsman more functions to deal with. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery, for bringing up that important point. I note Brett has made a good point in the chat here, which I will just read out. He says, in the bylaws discussions, I suggested that the Ombudsman should possess the authority to serve decisions under challenge from a request for reconsideration if irreversible harm could result. This is currently the case for the IRP, though the Ombudsman has no role in the IRP process. I was told this should be addressed in Workstream 2. He was highlighting it here so it doesn't get overlooked. So this is a good suggestion to think about, something that we could do with the Ombudsman's office. I think, you know, the lawyers might have something to say. But all right, let's let them say it, and we'll have, you know, we can have the discussion. Is there anyone else who wants to chime in on this issue? All right, not seeing any hands. Let's go forth. The next issue is diversity at ICANN. And so this is an issue that comes in part from the public experts group, the PEG, that was appointed. And they said, you know, ICANN really needs to be more diverse. You've got a lot of the same people, same mindsets with the same perspectives and the same backgrounds and the same interests, coming to the same decisions, and if ICANN is to be more accountable, it's going to have to be more diverse. And so trying to build in a community, a culture where there is more diversity of views, more diversity of perspectives, how this gets defined is very important. A lot of times when you hear diversity, you think, oh, you know, you just kind of want to roll your eyes because it just means, you know, more French speakers, sure, whatever. But this is important for an important issue for ICANN to be more accountable, is to hear the different perspectives from different walks of life, from people in different cultures and who have different things to say, and that is how ICANN will reach the best decisions that it can, is by including such a diversity of perspective in the deliberations. So this is an issue that we'll need some people to volunteer for. Did anybody want to weigh in, have any comments or questions on this issue? Farzi, yes, please, go ahead.
Hi, sorry, this is like my last intervention. I didn't sign up for this group, but one thing that we should consider, and there's a lot of hypocrisy going on in this diversity discussion. On one hand, they say, wonderful, we want diversity, we want people to come and join us. On the other hand, in their rules and for membership, they don't allow you to join them because you are an individual member, you are not an organization, or you don't reside in the country that you were born in. And, you know, there are all sorts of things that there's a hypocrisy going on in ICANN that I see it clearly by those that
want and championing diversity. So I think what we could look at in this diversity discussion is to look at how these constituencies and advisor groups and their rules can encourage diversity or impede diversity. Because ICANN as a corporation is doing its job, I would say. We have like this fellowship program, and we have all sorts of kind of outreach and all that. We also have to look at ourselves, like our constituencies, our advisor group and all that. Thank you.
Thanks, Farzi. That's a really good point. And I think that this issue, this diversity issue, much like the transparency issue, we're going to find a lot of overlap in some of the other issues. And, you know, like you pointed out, that the issue of SOAC accountability and how are we and our members. I remember hearing not too long ago that there wasn't a single member of China in the intellectual property constituency, and that was, you know, pretty shocking that they didn't have not one. So I think that again, this will be overlap, and as we look at SOAC accountability, and we'll want to consider things like diversity and how accessible are they and how welcoming are they. I think probably another issue would be language. I think it's often a chicken and an egg problem. We don't get an enormous amount of people who show up who can't converse in English, but that's in part because the language services that have been provided over the years. They're much better now, but they still aren't quite what they should be for somebody to really be able to join a working group and participate at a working group level. With language barriers, I think that's a big issue that we could be tackled in diversity. Anyone else want to weigh in on this one? Okay, let's move on. The next issue is reviewing the cooperative engagement process, also known as the CEP, which is the first step to filing an independent review panel matter. This is sort of a leftover from Workstream 1 and our work on reform of the independent review panel, and we never quite got to flesh out what we needed to do on the CEP, so it's found its way, luckily, into Workstream 2. So this is a process that doesn't have a lot of has no transparency requirements at all. It doesn't have any rules or guidelines. It's pretty much I've participated in this process, so I know that you're completely at the whim of ICANN legal to tell you what to do next. I mean, they can, you know, literally say the next step in this process is for you to stand on one head or stand on one hand, one foot, and pat your head, and you pretty much say, oh, have to do it because there's no written process, and the process unfortunately is used by ICANN's legal department to just extract information out of somebody before they go to litigation. And so it's sort of a discovery fishing expedition, one-sided. And, you know, you're not going to find anyone who's gone through a CEP and have anything good to say about it. It's just really a ripe for abuse and misuse by ICANN's legal department. And so that's an issue that needs to be worked on in Workstream 2. Does anyone want to weigh in on this one? Have some comments or questions? Okay, I don't see any. So let's continue with the final issue in Workstream 2, which is the guidelines for ICANN board standard of conduct, and this is associated with the board members. So there was some concern that now that the community has the right to remove board members, that, you know, the board's not going to know how they're supposed to behave, and they're going to be recalled every other week for wearing the wrong color T-shirt, that sort of thing. No, I'm just sort of teasing. But there was concern about what kinds of things they would be recalled for, they could be removed for, what kinds of conduct was expected of them. And so we agreed to sort of come up with a guidelines for the standard of conduct, trying to give board members an idea of expectations when it comes to fulfilling their fiduciary duties and you know, investigating issues that they need to make decisions on, that sort of thing. I do have a concern that this issue is sort of being framed and pushed in a way that be used to limit the community's powers to remove board members, and so that's my concern for this issue, and we need to watch it and make sure that isn't how it ultimately evolves. Anybody would like to weigh in on this issue, have any comments, questions, concerns on this final issue? I see Carlos. Yes, please go ahead.
Yes, thank you. This is Carlos Robin. I'm no lawyer, but I think there are some basic things that should not happen. The other day I was reading the fight that the discussion on Amazon, you know, Amazon's panel, and they argued that the same people who made decisions about assigning new domain names took the negative decision in the governance committee against Amazon. I think that's very silly. I mean, that should not happen in a corporation like ICANN. So if things like that happen, it means there is need to have some good document on that. As I say, I'm not a specialist. I'm not signing up. But I've been in business long enough, and international panels, you know, when you go to this arbitration process, this is one thing that it's shameful to see it on paper. It would be for me, I mean, if I was part of the board of ICANN. It's absolutely silly. So there are some serious work to be done there. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Carlos. Appreciate that. Anybody else want to get in the queue on this issue, the board's conduct, standard of conduct? Okay, not seeing any hands. That last issue of the nine work stream two issues that had been flagged. So I hope that everyone found at least one of those issues interesting and worth working on, and so I would like to encourage you to sign up both on the NCSG sign-up sheet, which is in lower right-hand box on the screen, and then to sign up for the actual CCWG working group. And I pasted the email in the chat, which I can do again, to sign up for that, to get working on some of these issues. So then let's go forward to the next issue on the agenda. Oh, I see some hands. Carlos, is that an old hand or a new hand?
This is a new hand, Robin. Just a clarification. What is this separation of class if you sign in the pink part, in the orange part, or in the blue part? Can you tell us something about that?
Are you? I'm sorry. Did somebody say something?
Sorry, I interjected. That is also what I raised my hand about to explain that.
Ah, okay. Aubrey, please.
Yeah, and I was going to explain it in a slightly different context. Basically, there's setting yourself up as an observer, and as an observer, you get to be on the list and listen to all the discussions, but you don't have to fill in an SOI. And you don't have to, you know, your attendance isn't made. You're not invited to speak at the meetings. And then there's the participant part, which I think is a green part, where you actually have to have an SOI and sign up. And the thing I wanted to point out is if you're not sure, signing up as an observer is great. And all you need to do to transition from observer to participant is let Grace or whomever know that, oops, I want to participate now, and then you switch from one list to another. So that, you know, if you're not sure, sign up as an observer. And concerned, watch it. And then if all of a sudden you notice your blood boiling, you know, you got something to say that you don't see being said, you know, then take that extra leap. Thanks.
Thanks very much, Ivory. Thanks for explaining the different statuses in the working group and how participation works. Okay, not seeing any other hands, let's move forward. The next issue would be sort of the NCSG work stream to working method. So I'd like to make a proposal for how we can manage this, what is obviously an enormous amount of work, this enormous workload. So I thought we could have regular monthly NCSG accountability focused webinars where, you know, basically once a month we have a meeting very similar to this one, and we can really dive deeply into the accountability working group issues and sub issues. And so, you know, we could, one possibility would be to do this, say around next month around this time, July 14th, and then every fourth Tuesday after that. This is, you know, really just a suggestion to sort of get the ball rolling and to get a thing about, you know, how this would work. But I think it's important that irrespective of the date and the time that we do have a focused monthly conversation about this, these issues and the progress being made in the working group in general. I think we should really try to do most of our work in the NCSG, try to do most of our work on our dedicated email list. We did set up a dedicated CCWG accountability email list for our members to let me just post the link in here. There it is. This is a dedicated email list where we can do a lot of our, have a lot of our discussions. It's like all of our policy lists. It's open. It's accessible to anyone on the web. It's archived. It's transparent. So we could do a lot. We could do our work there and then also report back to the main list as needed. It's just, I think we'll have a lot of sort of smaller sub-discussions that we don't want to use the main list for, because there are people who are not focused on this issue and might not want to hear all of the little details as we put things together. I'd like to see if we can get volunteers to serve as, without really having a better term, say a rapporteur on each one of these Workstream 2 sub-issues, to try to hold the pen and drive, hold the whip and drive the forces within the NCSG, as it were, to try to help us to strategize and work with the other stakeholder groups and advisory committees where we might have common objectives and to work together. So, you know, if we could have somebody, one or two people from the NCSG on each one of these sub-issues who can really try to manage the process for us, much like Tatiana and Niels have been doing on the human rights issue. It's proved so remarkably effective just having a couple people who are really focused on one sub-issue and able to help guide the rest of us into doing what we need to do to get the kind of recommendations and change that we need. So the road to Helsinki and ICANN 56, folks will be leaving next week for Helsinki. The CCWG accountability will meet all day on Sunday the 26th in Helsinki, and we're really going to tackle these Workstream 2 issues. So for those people who can be in Helsinki, that's an important meeting to be at, and there is remote participation. And I will not, unfortunately, be able to attend the Helsinki meeting. ICANN decided not to fund the travel costs anymore of the CCWG members. So, so I will be participating remotely in the CCWG work in Helsinki. But, you know, we'll certainly be online and available and, you know, accessible with you guys who will be there. And there'll be a couple meetings throughout the course of the week as well in Helsinki where they'll truly start to try to dive deeply into some of the work stream to sub-issues. So I think it's important to be there to begin to set the scope. ICANN staff is currently preparing a number of issue papers on each one of the sub-issues, and we should expect to see those before Helsinki, and those are intended to guide our discussions in Helsinki. And again, let's try to remember that work stream one is not done. We've got the implementation of all of these issues. The bylaws need to be actually affected. The independent review panel process has set up an implementation team that meets every Tuesday, and you know we're trying to come up with the rules for the new independent review panel process. And so we're not done with work stream one, and we need to figure out how to manage you know the workload, the enormous workload of both work stream one and work stream two at the same time. let me just stop here and take a breath, see if anybody had any comments or suggestions on questions about how we can work going forward on these issues. How do you guys feel about having trying to organize a monthly webinar where we can go over the progress on the issues? I see a green tick from Carlos. That's good. And a green tick from Aiden. Okay, we're seeing some no red ticks, only green ticks. That's good. All right, so let's try to do that and really try to use the mailing list that we've set up. It's been rather quiet for the last couple of months, but let's turn that around and you know, get busy to work on these work stream two issues. I also thought we should talk about how should the CCWG accountability approach these work stream issues and manage its workload. I know they've talked about going down to meetings only twice a month, every 2 weeks, and having the subgroups report to the main group. There's concern about, as we mentioned before, about the decreased transparency of the work stream two issue. That's something that we need to flag on this issue of how it should work is not decrease the transparency. It should continue at the same, if not improved transparency than what we've had in work stream one. Dividing the issues, there is some concern that, you know, dividing this into 9 different issues and then is going to be really hard for us to manage and to keep track of everything going on in each one of the different issues. So that's why I'm really hoping we can have small teams or in each one of these sub-issues with somebody sort of holding the pen, the whip on that particular sub-issue. Any other comments on how the CCWG should approach the Workstream 2 issues and manage its workload? Okay, I don't see any. Well, that was the last substantive issue on our agenda for today. The only other thing is any other business. So was there anything that anyone wanted to add on this? Okay, I see a couple of hands raised. Avery and then Niels. Please, Avery, go ahead.
Yeah, thanks. I just wanted to talk about one other thing in terms of how we work on all of this, and that's not only on mailing lists but on chat. And a rocket.chat space, a group chat space with the ability to thread different discussions and have different discussions was created. And I'm wondering whether that's a useful tool to see if we can use that as well as lists for those quick questions and quick conversations that, you know, don't need to go into longer mail streams. I'm just wondering if we can also start to use some of those other techniques while we're putting all this stuff together. Thanks.
Thanks, Avery. Yes, so it looks like Aiden just posted the address to that chat, ncuc.chat, in the chat box there. And that's a good idea. If we can sign up a chat and try to use that. I haven't signed up for that yet, but this will give me a good reason to do so. Anybody else have any comments on that suggestion or on the working method in general or on any other business in general? I see Niels is next in the queue. Go ahead, Niels.
Yes, for all of those who cannot live without ICANN calls or just have a profound interest, especially in human rights, and just want some time to make some coffee and refresh themselves, in 30 minutes, the call, Cross Community Working Party on ICANN's Corporate and Social Responsibility to Respect Human Rights starts. We always keep the call under an hour. That's a promise. Great value for your time. Looking forward to see you all there in this channel, so you can even just stay online and still make that meeting. Thank you.
Thanks very much, Niels. That's great. You can just leave this window open and in half an hour, rinse and repeat. okay, was there anyone else who wanted to make a comment before we call this meeting to a close? Nope. Okay. Well, thank you all. I greatly appreciate your willingness to go through these issues with me and consider signing up for one or more of the subgroups and participating in this very important working group. Thank you very much. We can disconnect now.
Thank you very much, everyone, for attending the meeting. Brett, you may now stop the recording. Thank you for your time today.